I'm curious about that unicorn, what's it called, game that is in that direct too, talking about strategy games.
Oh, the new like the new
something
like
something
VanillaWare game or
unicorn
something.
something. Yeah.
That looked pretty cool.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
It looked like the most interesting game out because it looked like it was from the same team that's made like those that VanillaWare team.
Yes.
What's the name of the like for Odin Sphere and like
Yep.
the other games that they made? Like
Yep.
this one looked like the most. I was like, ooh, there's like a little more going on than just kind of like a beat 'em up with more layers, you know?
Oh, way
This
more
looked like it was like, oh, this is
strategy
way more going
leaning.
on here.
Yeah.
Yeah, like but it like because there were some crazy clips where it was like it would show like kind of like a that isometric grid like in the corner left of the screen, but then it was like kind of like a regular like battle side scrolling at this. I was like, man, what is that like factoring into like how the
terrain
battle
and
lays
stuff.
out? Yeah, I was very curious how that worked, how that played in.
Unicorn Overlord?
It had a name. It had a name like kind of similar to like Octopath Traveler.
Yeah, for sure.
Project Triangle Strategy, except it's not Project. It's just Triangle Strategy.
Just make it sound epic. That's all you need. Vague and epic. Hey everybody, welcome to Pursuing Pixels. My name is Kevin Portelli and I'm here tonight with John Hines.
Hey there.
And Randall Nollery.
Hey folks.
And we are back as always to talk about some video games. I guess we can just dive right into it this week. I've been doing a bunch of my streaming again. I shouldn't say a bunch, but I've been trying to hop on like once, maybe twice a week at the most, just like if I have like an off day after work where, or I shouldn't say an off day, but if I have a day after work where there's not much going on. And I'm just like, you know what? What else am I doing tonight? I could either watch some random thing on Netflix or TV or whatever, or I can play a video game and do a quick stream. And like, as long as I'm feeling up to it and my body's not hurting me enough, I've been like, okay, let's just fire up a stream, even if it's just for like an hour, hour and a half, two at the most. Like, that's enough. You know, I used to always be like, I'm not streaming long enough because I feel like whenever I would watch or talk to any of my friends that do it, they're like, I'm streaming all day long. I'm like, I just can't do it that way. You know, I just do it when I feel good enough. I can't be on any kind of like schedule for the most part. Although I'm trying to get a little more, you know, into a routine with it to some degree, just so I can be like, hey, if, you know, if I'm able to, Mondays is a good night or something like that. But anyways, I've been just kind of combing through, like, again, since I've been for the last like year or so, just getting situated and like stockpiling games in my Steam library or wherever else, you know, on my Switch, wherever else I've been picking up games. And in this case, getting a couple of games sent our way from a couple of big developers that I'm a big fan of and borderline, I would call them pals. I don't know them in person or anything, but just have, you know, had some really pleasant interactions with them over the years. And the first game I'll talk about here is The Shadow King, and this is from Johan Peitz is the developer. And this is like a little mini, and Johan's finally, like, just, I shouldn't say finally, but just started recently getting into kind of commercially releasing his Pico 8 games.
Nice.
Which is really cool to see. Like, they have just like a plethora of like another developer that just has probably dozens of whether they're Game Jam. Like, I know we've even talked about some of their other Pico 8 games, like Alpine Alpaca. I know we gave a quick shout out on the podcast years ago, like a deck building skiing game, like just some really cool and truly like a Pico 8 wizard, like doing like the Pico 8 like synthesizer. I think it has it might just be Pico Synth or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just all sorts of crazy, like experimental stuff, Pico CAD, which is just nuts. Like the stuff that they've been able to pull off on the Pico 8, like quote unquote hardware, software, is just really, really cool. But yeah, now they've started getting into just kind of making like their own independent little games. They even have a Patreon where you can sign up and they're not on any kind of monthly schedule. They're just kind of like, hey, whenever I release a game, you get it for a few bucks cheaper than you would get it if you know, bought it normally, which they're normally only like $5 or so. Again, he was kind enough to send this one our way. And this was probably almost a year ago. I think this was one of the first games that they put out as like a commercially released game that you could purchase. And it's just like a nice short and sweet little mini Metroidvania. Almost like when I finished it on the stream, I was like, I almost wish there was like a little bit more to it, like especially in my head being that it was like a game you could buy. I was like, I was expecting it to maybe be just like a little bit longer. But again, also being me that never finishes a game, let alone a Metroidvania, I was like, I'm kind of happy I just played this game start to finish. And there like was no, you know, crazy, you know,
petering
hurdle
off
that I had to get over. Yeah, or like losing momentum or anything like that. It just was like, I guess the only reason was just that it left a little bit to get desired, because it kind of starts off really strong in the sense like you basically, you move kind of slow. It took a little minute, like even when I'm like calibrating my settings for streams, I was like, is there some kind of issue with like hooking this, my laptop up to my TV? Sometimes like certain games just with the HDMI cord will not, I don't know, just won't play nicely between that and my TV, and there'll be a little bit of lag with the input or the audio or whatever. So I was like, no, I watched some trailers. I was like, no, it looks like that's like the walk animation. It's just this kind of real like minimal like frame animation. And you just kind of like move a little bit slowly. But that's sort of the gist of it, is because your main mechanic, once you get like the sword that you unlock, you get like this dash mechanic. And then later in the game, you get like a kind of downward dash ground pound. I think they call it a pile driver. I forget exactly what [S2] Nice. [S1] The terminology they use. But just the way the level design is just so intricately stitched together. Again, it starts off with kind of a bang. You see these spider webs that at the moment you can only kind of walk on and bounce on and whatever, but nothing crazy. Like you can't get it. You can see these higher ledges that you think you can get to, but you're like, okay, I clearly can't get there yet. But then eventually when you get that like dive bomb attack, that's what it's called, dive bomb. Then you can dive bomb instead of dashing like either left or right. You can dash essentially downwards and like slam into the ground, then you can slam into those webs that then springboard you up to the next layer, like much, much higher. And they're like, just the way, again, it's a really mini Metroidvania. I think I beat the game in about a half hour, maybe nice. 45 minutes at the most. So it's on the short side, but like, I really had a good time just like ripping through. You just dash into the enemies to attack them. You get a, you know, upgrade later on. You get like a spear that has like a slightly, you know, bigger attack range. And I think it allows you to double jump. I'm trying to remember. I don't think you got the ability to double jump. Maybe it just makes your attack a little bit stronger and dive bomb a little bit stronger as well. And the dive bomb in general is like double the attack of like what you normally do. But it's just kind of nice like to like every enemy you kill for the most part seems to drop a heart. So like it just never gets like too challenging. It was just kind of nice like with just really, really great level design. Again, the only minor complaint is just that it was a little short and sweet, and it started off with that bang. There's like a really cool spider boss battle, like you're like, and it kind of teases it with like the webs that you can't do anything with at first. So I kind of got the feeling of like, oh man, if this is just the first opening boss, like this game is really gonna get, you know, get crazy after this. And there, you know, it stays short. Yeah, there, like there's not a bunch of different zones with like an ice zone or a fire zone. Not, and that gets old, you know, sometimes too when you're just playing, okay, here's my game with all the usual water area, the fire, the sand, the desert, whatever. So it was kind of nice to just play a nice short and sweet mini Metroidvania. Great music, pretty typical Pico 8, you know, tunes. But yeah, I had a really good time with that one front to back. And then after that, I don't know if it was on the same stream or not, but I fired up another game called Fungus Reaper. This is not a game that was on the Pico 8, but it's developed by a very prolific Pico 8 developer, another kind of buddy of ours, Sebastian Lind. I think this is maybe his third game outside of the Pico 8 realm. I know played The Mummy's Walk, which I may or may not have talked about on the podcast, kind of like a top-down Zelda-style puzzle platformer-ish. You're not jumping per se, but you're kind of like slingshotting yourself with your like mummy wraps. That game's actually really cool. I never finished that one, and I need to go back and play that one. And then they kind of made a souped-up version of Cards with Personalities, which was initially a Pico 8 game, but just kind of like souped it up, gave it like a... still has that Pico 8 flavor with the presentation, and same thing with this Fungus Reaper game. Like, it almost looks like it could be... If there was like a Pico 16 or something like that,
slightly more, but not.
Yeah, like there's like a little more detail to the animations, a little more. Obviously, it's like it's widescreen. It's not restricted to that, like, you know, 4:3 ratio or whatever it is on like this, you know, square full screen ratio. But yeah, I just got pretty sucked into this one again. I haven't played a ton of it, maybe 5 or 10 runs, maybe a tiny bit more because I played a few before the stream and then erased my save file, started like a fresh one. But I really love the presentation of this game. Number one, I love like the juxtaposition between like you're basically like it's a top down roguelike experience. And then you're like kind of switching between three different modes. You're kind of like traveling on the overworld. That is kind of like a level in and of itself. Like there'll be like spikes. It's like kind of turn-based, timing-based, where like every time you move, that's like a turn, you know, And then there's enemies on that overworld that you can bump into and then initiate a battle. And then when you go into a battle, it almost turns into like a tower defense, like light, very lightly tower defense, but like turn-based strategy game, but like top-down, where you're like, you get these like mushling characters, almost like they're like a Pokemon, you know, that like you collect along the way, and, you know, new monster in your collection. And then before the battle starts, you can kind of like place them somewhere on this grid that's maybe, I don't know the exact size, but maybe it's like 8x10 or something like that. Seems like it's a little taller than it is wide. But the enemies will start like charging down from the top of the screen. And if they reach the bottom of the screen, they do damage to you, or if they just attack you in general. But then you can place all your different mushlings. Like you might have one that you throw and it's like a bomb mushling. So after it gets loses all its health, it just explodes and kills any nearby enemy. Or you might have one that's like a magnet mushling that you can, like, when you jump, a lot of them are triggered as like you jump over the mushling to like trigger the attack or whatever its effect is. So like you basically just move up, down, left, and right. And if there's a mushling to, you know, above you, if you press up, you just jump right over it to the next available tile. And then if they are a mushling that triggers like a, oh, if it's a magnet mushling, it'll pull in any enemies that are to the left or right of it and pull them closer. And then you might have another mushling that's going to explode right next to it. So it gets nice. Pretty strategic. Like, I haven't gotten far enough to really feel like I'm getting into the strategic layer of like my decision making. It almost feels like I'm more just kind of like randomly placing stuff. But I just really love the, like, you're it's turn based, but then there is a real time timer ticking as well, that like if you don't make a turn in, it's a decently long amount of time, maybe like 3, 4, 5 seconds. But like if you don't do anything, then like the enemies will just proceed to their next move. But then you also have a way to like kind of jump start that, or like kind of short circuit that, I guess is a better way to put it, is like you also have like a teleport maneuver that you can utilize to like make a move without like taking a turn, if you will. Ooh. So it won't move. So like you might say like, okay, that enemy is going to move and attack that bomb and kill it, but I don't want it to do that just yet, or just do damage to me at the end. So like I'm just going to teleport right next to it and attack it and kill it before it can do that, but like I won't recharge my teleport for 5 or 6 more turns. So like you really got to be thinking about like all the layers of like this real time element, but this turn based element, and there's just like just the right amount of layers, and it feels like just arcadey enough, but just strategic enough. Again, I haven't played enough to really get like the layers of the strategy down, but I feel like if I can get there, I feel like this game has potential to be like really suck me in. And I know you've played a little bit of this too, as well, John.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat where of like, I know I'm not getting all the mechanics, and like the first couple runs I did, like, I don't know if there is like an instruction screen. I just dove right in from the get-go. And like there's the first area you can skip completely, and it is kind of a tutorial area, but like you leave your house and then you start a run, and then you interact with an enemy, and you're immediately given like 3 scarecrow instead of like fungus to like place. And like you can use that, then that kind of introduces you, and you don't get any experience. You don't take any damage in this first area. So that's kind of you learning the ropes of like the way that the games work. But like my first couple runs, I was not like juggling those like real time timer or the teleportation, or even like, I was putting myself in positions where I was taking damage more than I was giving it out, or like not jumping over the fungus in the right way. And then after like the second run or so, I was like, oh, this is what I'm doing wrong. This is how the game is supposed to be played. And actually it started to click for me. But yeah, I really love the way you were talking about it. Like there's the like different levels of it, and like the moving on to a new area where the overworld is a lot more puzzle based, or where,
it gets like pretty tricky. I was like, there's like a whole like gameplay element on this.
Yeah. Nice. And like the first time, like how many fungus have you had in like, or how many fungi have you had in like at a time? What is the maximum number you've reached?
I'm I'm trying to think, because I feel like no more than like 4 or 5 at the most. And I thought when I got to like 4, it like made me sacrifice one.
Ooh, okay.
To keep another one. But I can't remember if that was for a different reason, or I'm drawing a blank now. But I think there was like a maximum you could have.
Because I've only gotten to 5, and then I hadn't gotten the opportunity to get, because like I was. The other thing that I really like is the placement of them at the beginning also takes turns. Yeah. So like, as you do that, like you can place one either in front of you, or if you want to move, you have to move over, and that will also start a countdown, like the enemies
for the
coming
enemies to start like kind of quote unquote raining down from the top or whatever. Yeah.
Right. It's really like, cleverly built and cleverly constructed in that way, and I think that's really interesting, even if I'm not particularly good at it. Like, yeah. I'm still figuring out like the optimal ways, and like every time I come up with or encounter a new enemy, I'm suddenly like, oh god, how are they going
what
to
is
like
this
throw
thing
a wrench into this?
Well, that's one thing that I was noticing too at the end of the stream, like as I was wrapping it up, I went back to like the title screen and started looking at like the, I never know how to say this word, bestiary, yep, whatever. And I was looking at that, and it does give like a nice description of like what each enemy does. And I really just like the, all the, like, even when you're on the menu screen, just everything kind of like just wavers like side to side. Nothing's just like a static thing on the menu, you know, everything's just kind of like slightly moving. And Sebastian's, cool. Yeah, exactly. Sebastian's always so good at that. And I love the, even just like when you're going down to the next floor and you jump on that ladder and just slide down it super fast, like just the, all the transitions, the, everything. And then another really cool thing too, like to kind of like finalize and gives it like a little bit of that, like makes the roguelike element feel more like a campaign in a way, like it just in a really small way. But ever at the end of any run, when you die, the mushlings that you have on your squad, you like throw them into a cauldron, and then you have to actually like take the D-pad or whatever and like stir the soup up left and right. And then you get to like swig that soup, and then it gives you like a little mini buff for your next run. Like, oh, you get to start the next run with +2 health, or you get to start the next run with this mushling on your squad and extra energy or something like that, based on like the, you know, recipe or whatever that it ends up being. So I just thought that was like such a cool, like adding so many layers into this game, into such a fully like well thought out package. I'm just really impressed. Not surprised, because Sebastian just always is making awesome stuff, but I think this is one of the coolest things that he's released yet. I really love this one, and looking forward to playing some more of it.
Same.
Presentation sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of, I guess, well, I don't even know if that's a transition, but speaking of presentation, I know, Randall, you've been firing up some little retro re-release lately.
Yeah, there's a good amount of presentation there. Yeah, I'd say. And also, you know, we've been dabbling a lot with, you know, Pico 8 of it all. And, you know, this is, there's certainly, you know, the pushing the console, quote unquote, to its limits, I think, comes into play here, too.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Playing, I've been playing, or I was playing, Mr. Gimmick, or Gimmick exclamation point.
What do they call it in this case? Is it just Gimmick now?
I think Mr. is still on the box, although when you look it up and you do a Google search, they don't add the Mr., which is interesting. I'm not gonna stop calling it Mr. Gimmick though.
Yeah, it feels better. feels right to me.
Yeah, it's right there. So Sunsoft, this was a late era NES/Famicom game, 92-93 territory. But what I'm playing is the Switch re-release that happened last year, 2 years, something like that.
Sounds about right. I think it was towards the end of last year. Yeah, I feel like I added it to my Amazon cart relatively recently. It's towards the top of like the physical copy, and I'm guessing that's what you
here. I'm the schmo that got the special edition with the plushie and everything on this one in particular.
Hey, it's a cute character. That's a plushie I wouldn't mind owning.
Yeah, although the stitching's not great. It's already starting to fall out a little bit in the back.
Oh,
and
that
as you
stinks.
Can, you know, I'm someone that keeps my stuff pretty pristine in the first place.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Come on.
That's
factory
stinks.
Issues. But I got a big history with this. You know, I don't buy many special editions, but I'm like, yeah, I got a big history with this. The pins and stuff look nice. The soundtrack is incredible, which we'll get into. And there's some stuff around that. But I tried to buy a a homebrew, not even a homebrew, like a
repro card.
Repro, yes, that's the word. I tried to buy a repro NES cartridge of what I believe was like, because it came out in the PAL regions back in the 90s, but not in the United States. It primarily was Japan, and then came out in like PAL.
And like the Netherlands or something.
Yeah.
Or I don't know why I remember that. I think that's right. Like the area where it's like, that's where like the, it's called Mr. Gimmick in the Netherlands.
Yes.
Or something like that. I forget what it is, but it's something to do with that.
That's the translated version, and it works on our lowly Western NES consoles that don't have the extra sound chip capabilities of some of the Famicom stuff you can do. That, yeah, there's a whole
rabbit hole
that we could go down there. The Switch version kind of lets you hear some of that stuff, and it's even crazier than what this PAL version can do. It's nuts.
Okay.
All that to say, I got that repro many, many years ago. There's actually still a YouTube video up from, it says 11 years ago, I uploaded this YouTube video to shame RetroZone/RetroUSB because this guy sold me a glitched cartridge of Mr. Gimmick and was avoiding me when I was trying to just get a refund or to get a version that operated because I wanted so badly to play this
game.
Yeah, if
I'm not mistaken, I might even personally have that cartridge
in my
collection, because I was going to say, I remember you like gave it to me because you're like, because I had just gotten my top loader and you're like, maybe it'll work on your top loader. It doesn't even work for me, so just try it. Maybe it'll at least work.
Yeah.
And it never worked for me either. I could like get it to boot like a gnarled title screen and never was able to boot it up either.
I know. I wanted it so bad. The visual glitches, though, just wasn't going to happen. So all these years later, I'm such an older man now, and I finally got a chance
older and wiser
Mr. Gimmick. And because I am a sicko, I have the NES Switch controllers. So
yes.
I have NES controllers to pair alongside official Nintendo released NES controllers for the Switch that I could play this version of Gimmick with. And thankfully, this special edition of Gimmick comes with modern emulator features like Rewind and Save State and Art Gallery, They added, you know, the kind of stuff around the edges. And my goodness, specifically the Rewind function came in very handy for me because this game might be one of the hardest.
It's so
games.
Hard. It's so hard.
Obscenely difficult. But the production values are just like, if you're willing to like really see through it and push through the pain, it's kind of unbelievable what the effort they put into developing this thing between the music and what they're getting out of the NES/Famicom sound chip. And like, there's even on the Wikipedia page, they like talk about it and with the composer and like what they had asked of the composer to make, and you know, how they had several influences of genres from pop music to bass-driven acid jazz, Fantasia, dramatic hard rock, and jazz fusion, and not commonly heard in NES and Famicom. And so they really like leaned into this to like maximize what it could be. This is Sunsoft.
And visually as well.
Visually,
too. I mean, not to undersell the soundtrack,
no.
But yeah, the visuals are like it.
They're
and
great.
Even the physics too.
The like physics are just as impressive as the soundtrack. The physics, it makes no sense that they were able to create this where like, you know, it's a platformer game, side-scrolling platformer, but the main gimmick is that you have this star that you can conjure above your head and then throw at kind of a downward 45 degree angle, you know, in front of you, can even jump throw or whatever, and then it starts bouncing, but it's not randomly bouncing, it's bouncing on the exact trajectory that you are throwing it from and where. And it's like, you could get really good at this game if you decided that's something you wanted to do. Like, it is not by accident. You know, it is very explicitly designed with the physics in an 8-bit NES/Famicom game.
Yeah.
Like it's later on in some of these levels, it starts to expect that you have some of this down, and it is not easy to get this down. And it, not only is that star used to hit enemies, but you can also ride on that star as a platform. You know, and it's only one star because of the limitations on how many sprites there can be on a given scan line on the NES. You can only have one star at a time. And, you know, once that star dissipates, then you could throw another one. But like they're just they're taking all of these, you know, constructs, you know, into place when they're making this gameplay. And yeah, all that to say, brutally difficult. I couldn't beat it, even with rewind features and save states. Like, I had to tap out at, like, a level 5 boss, and there's only, like, 6 levels, I think.
Oof. Dang, that's pretty far. I mean, I played on an emulator, but because I couldn't get that cartridge running.
Yeah.
But never utilized the rewind feature too much, but I think I only beat, like, maybe the first boss, if that. Like, maybe 2 at the most, but... Yeah, I did have a couple moments where I just got super lucky and like banked the star off a wall and rode it through half of a level. And it's like, and you could clearly tell like this is made for like speed running, like, you know, and stuff like that. Like, oh, man, just and all the slopes and the slope angles
surfaces
and like,
in the level, which is not easy to do, especially in that era either. Yeah. Just really impressive stuff. I liked playing it that way just because I had enough experience trying to power through that repro copy of it. And maybe it came out on like Wii Virtual Console or one of those. Like, I think I maybe had dabbled on a version at some point.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I don't remember, but it's.
I had enough experience that I could pick up and play this Switch one fairly quickly, you know, despite the, you know, learning curve.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I'd recommend it if you could play it with those limitations and the what you're going to hit your head against the wall in mind. If you can play it, you know, where you have rewind features and otherwise to at least experience more of the different levels and themes and soundtrack that's on offer here. It's pretty impressive. I'm glad I own it, but it's also quite painful. Very impressive.
Yeah, that's one that I hope to add that physical copy to my collection someday too, because I do feel like it's just one, especially just because that I in my head it's like I almost have it in like, man, I really wanted to check that game out after you gave me that cartridge and it just never worked, and it's like just this like elusive game in my mind. So now that it's like oh, you can just buy it on Amazon or wherever at the, you know, at the store and get a physical copy of this game. This is almost like surreal.
I know it's very strange. But, yeah, thank goodness for the Switch. All this stuff comes out on it now at this point.
Yeah.
All the retro revivals and anything else.
Yeah, it's definitely good to see. Yeah, and again, those visuals are just so charming. And it's so misleading because it's got that kind of Kirby, colorful, like charming tone. And it's just not at all the difficulty level. Yeah.
Completely brutal.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, why don't we kick it over to John here for some of the stuff that you've still been cycling through these days.
Nice one, because I've been cycling through lonely mountains downhill.
But I've been playing quite a bit of that myself too. Yeah.
Oh yeah, but we were talking a little bit before on the podcast how playing a lot of the daily runs and just going little by little through the levels, like daily runs were great because they were getting me to play a lot of levels that I hadn't gotten through before.
Sure.
And I think they might have even had the DLC ones before I had downloaded the DLC. So like the daily runs allow you to like play those levels, albeit like in a weird setting, because sometimes like they'll have different routes or they'll have more obstacles.
Yeah, like a boulder blocking your path. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is I love, because that makes you go experiment in different ways and says like, okay, well, there has to be another path around here if like the main one and the main shortcut is blocked off, and then you find these little secret paths, and it's great.
That's cool.
I love it most of the time. There are a time like the other day that I didn't end up finishing the race or whatever the trail, because I was like, I don't know where I can go. This almost feels like it's just a random like procedurally generated boulder blockage, and like there's no actual way to get around it, but like,
see,
obviously
I don't think it's procedurally generated.
I don't think it is either, because it just feels like that'd be too hard. Maybe it procedurally generates like where the checkpoints end up, maybe, but that's like the
I think that the checkpoints still, like when they're in a weird place, I think it guides you to find these different paths. I think they like probably just made a bunch of these and banked
there's
them.
Just sometimes when they're so right. close together and then so far apart that in my head I'm like, that seems random, but I, ooh, who knows?
I think it's great because then like if you're it psychs you out. I think so much of the daily runs
that is part of it.
Are
it's
like,
a mental.
And but a thing that I really appreciate is that they've like force me to play in different ways or think about it in different ways and like mm-hmm. get better at the game by having me focus on different areas or stuff. And I think the way that the game does that normally that I really, really appreciate is, you know, you have your explorer where there's no time limit. You can crash as many as mm-hmm. times as you want and you're just getting to the next checkpoint. And the more you do that, then you get more comfortable with those checkpoints. And then eventually they start adding more time limits or have a limit.
Crashes.
Yeah, how many crashes you can do with a time limit. And then they have the free ride where you have to do it from the top to bottom with no crashes. And I was making the analogous comparison of kind of how we approach practicing in bands where you hit a section that's really difficult and you're like, all right, we're just going to play this section over and over again until we're comfortable with that. Then we're going to try that section with a transition into the other section or into a previous one. And then you build that a little bit stronger. And then you say, okay, well now we're going to take it from the top, like, and really get comfortable with it. And it feels so similar to that.
That's the perfect analogy. When you said that, I was like, that is so spot on. Cause it can like, every time I start a daily, I'm like, do I really want to finish this one? And not that I finish each one of them, but I'm like, I'm only on the first of 10 sections or 8 sections of this trail. Like, and then you start chipping away and you're like, okay, oh, I got a pretty good time on that chunk. Oh, I didn't see that shortcut. Oh, I can make this even a little better. You know what? I'm going to restart the whole run and I'm just going to shave off.
See, that's like, the thing, because sometimes I feel like I can get really good at one section and whatever it is we're talking about, but then I lose the momentum and the flow of it all potentially along the way, right? As you're meant to go between one section and another.
Yeah.
And a thing that I've started to do is to elongate how long I'm playing this game because I don't want to gorge on it and burn myself out, is I'm basically doing a daily run and then one other challenge.
Nice.
And then I'm shutting the game down. And as I'm doing that, I'm also kind of have like a little perverse joy. It's like, oh, I had a really good run. I'm going to forget about this. I'm going to specifically forget about this so that when I come back to it, I'm like, I did this before. How did I do this in 10 seconds? I don't remember. I really like getting a little bit more comfortable or getting more where it's like, okay, if I really have this, I'll be able to replicate this. And if I don't, then I really need to like work hard and get it. So it's not just a fluke. And it feels so great. It feels so good to get good at that game.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's just there's something about the reflexivity, if that's a word, which I think it is. Just the reflexiveness of like the controls in that game and just every little like there's so many little bumps in the terrain that like even if you're trying to do the same thing each time, you're always going to like bounce off a little angle of that terrain a little differently than you did the first time.
You got to react.
And it's just the perfect element of like, It's a perfect video game.
It really is.
Even the fact that there's no music, like it actually kind of like makes me mad when I watch the trailer for the game because they have like this like cheesy like Millen Collin No Cigar ripoff song playing and they show like a bunch of crashes and I'm like get this out of here. This is like, I mean, it works for the trailer. It's fine, but it's like there's something so great about just hearing like the tires digging into the dirt and the birds chirping and the wind and the water and
no distractions.
And like makes it so much better. It would get so old if you had to keep hearing these replayed songs over and over. You wouldn't say, let me try that again. Let me try that again. You're just like, you get in this Zen state with that game. And I love it.
And then my other Zen state game that I've been doing, you just keep teeing me up, Kev, is Monster Hunter World. Still playing it. I'll still be playing this forever. I've got many more weapons that I haven't tried out or trees that I haven't maxed out. And the marker of fluency, competency, whatever the correct word I would use to describe it, with a new weapon loadout is if I can do a story mission with it. And because the game doesn't really have grinding per se, what it has is like kind of tiers where you can upgrade all of your armor up to a certain amount, and then you have to progress in the story, do some story missions, or like hunt specific monsters in order to unlock the next rank, and then you can upgrade your armor further or do more stuff. But even then, there's still like a little bit that you can do where you just, you know, hunt specific monsters and get a specific loadout that is tailored to whatever the monster that you are stuck on or whatever the like hurdle is. But for the most part, I'll just do other stuff. And then after I've kind of had my fun, move on to a story mission or a big whatever the big next monster is. And usually when I do that, I pick a weapon that I'm comfortable with, usually like insect glaive or light bow gun. And this was like the first time that I did charge blade, which is one of the, I don't know how you would, there's every weapon it controls so differently. It's not really easy to categorize them without explaining what the like mechanics of each one is.
Which, that's great. There's the, there's a lot of depth there alone.
Oh yeah. And like big time. Insect glaive, I always describe as like a pole vaulter, like but that you can also do a little mini game of aiming an insect at a specific area on a weapon, and it will give you charges, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, and light bow gun is just a gun. And with like our ammo that you craft that does specific things and behaves in different ways and has different recoil rates, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But charge blade is the first like combo melee weapon that I ever encountered with, because insect glaive is just about moving as fast as possible. Like it's a really slow, deliberate game. And for a lot of things, and especially with some of the heavier weapons, you have to set up a combo where you have a monster that's running around an arena so fast or is going to like stop running and start attacking you. And if you get hit by the attack, you are dead. So there's a lot of timing of like and placement of you. And insect glaive is all about getting in and getting out as fast as possible and like clearing yourself. And light bow gun is, you know, I'm really at a far range and just like lining up shots on weak points. Mm-hmm. So like those were very specific ways of playing the game. And charge blade was the first like, all right, I got to know where the hitboxes are of this enemy and where their attacks are going to be and where I can position myself to just turn this sword and shield into a giant axe that I have this combo that lets out. And it feels so satisfying to land. And I'm always nervous on like, oh man, am I going to be the person who triple carts on this and just like drags everyone down, or am I going to actually contribute to this like battle? And I finally did that with this and like felt like I was, you know, at least pulling my weight, if not excelling at that. I was like, ah, it feels good to learn another weapon in this game. And like, every time I'm like, oh, well, I'll try a new weapon. And I was like, nope, too much to learn. Can't figure this one out. Don't know how to be effective with this.
That's not easy to do with the pressures of online multiplayer either.
Seriously.
That's big time. Like, that's really putting yourself out there to do that with a newer weapon.
And I feel like it is a little bit harder in co-op than it would be in like competitive. Because, like, I still play fighting games where I will, you know, I don't know, ever feel that competitive to muse, like, a main. I will play a character I'm terrible at against randos and, like, have fun with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, getting KO'd on a monster, or like getting back from getting KO'd and then getting immediately KO'd again. It's like, oh, this is miserable for everyone involved. Oh,
sorry, folks. Sorry about that.
Yep. Mission failed. Oh, great. Thanks, guys. Have another fun 30 minutes on your own in the next fight.
That's the thrill of it, man. Though. That is the online co-op experience. It honestly is.
Like, I'm never upset when other people do encounter that. So why am I holding myself to that standard?
Yeah, that's right. If they're getting upset about it, it's kind of their problem more than anything. Yeah,
100%. But and also, I kind of love when I get into a match and it's all four people. I was like, oh, we've all kind of been carried up until this point. Now it's time for all of us to panic together.
You gotta show up. Everyone's gotta show up.
But it feels so great when, like, you are battling through and everyone's, like, on the brink of death, and then you just barely scrape through it and everybody's so happy at the end. Ugh.
Yes.
What a great game.
That's how you find your superstars. Like, you take the superstar got injured. Mm-hmm. It's the Chicago Bulls. Yep. And now Coby White has an opportunity to play.
Role players.
To the next role.
Tyrese Maxey, baby.
I can't stand him, but Tom Brady. I mean, he literally never would have played, potentially, if Drew Bledsoe never got injured.
Exactly.
You know? So you never know. Never know who's on the bench.
It's opportunity comes a knocking.
Yeah.
Take the next step.
But I'm glad it sounds like, number one, you're getting a lot of mileage out of these games that you've been playing, but, like, you know, again and again, week in and week out, John. But, like, it seems like you're getting a lot of mileage out of that Steam Deck, too, which is awesome.
Oh, yeah, I'm very glad. And, you know, it's all games. None of them have really been new games other than Monster Hunter World. And even that is an iteration of a series that I already knew I loved. But, man, what a good platform.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
For real, though.
Yeah.
Getting a lot of use case there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like having a Switch that can play different games.
Honestly, yes.
And a little more jankily, potentially.
Yes.
But I guess we could probably leave it there for this week for the video games chit chat if you guys are good. And as always, you can find us on the internet at pursuingpixels.com and pretty much everywhere else. Just look up Pursuing Pixels. And otherwise, we will catch you next week. And until then, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I don't know if you heard Regis come in at one point and start meowing for her dinner.
I didn't know that, actually. No,
she walked as, like, I started talking. She came in and was like, meow, meow.
I was actually just texting with my dad earlier today because I was like, there was like some other noise going on, and I was like, mentioned we were gonna start recording like a little bit earlier, and in my head I'm like, oh, 10. Like, usually everything's a little quiet around here, but I was like, you know what? It just is what it is. There's like sometimes there's sound, sometimes there's not. Like.
Mm-hmm.
You just gotta roll with the punches. Same thing with the streams. Like, one time I was I think I mentioned last time, like, playing Kid Bubblegum, snowplow comes by right outside my front door. Hey,
it's fine.
It is what it is. Good time to cut off the stream.
Welcome to Michigan. Snowplow time. Yeah.
Yeah.